We are going to start off with a little bit of Brandon Burton trivia for you, Scott. Are you ready? Okay. What was Brandon Burton's first job? Oh. Was he A, rodeo MC, B, a rodeo clown, or C, a bull rider?
I don't think bull riding's a job. I mean, it can be, but you're going to start off that.
Make some good money.
I'm going to say he was rodeo clown, which goes way against his personality. But
all right, Brandon, tell us, is that right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Rodeo MC, my friend. Rodeo MC.
Welcome to Pulse 21, the podcast that, in 21 minutes or less, provides inspiration and insights from influential leaders who are guiding the restoration industry into the future. Stop working harder and start working smarter.
Hey everyone, I'm Rex Harson from CoreLogic, and I am excited to be introducing our very first Pulse 21 episode. Today's guest host is Scott Sevierre, and he is interviewing Brandon Burton. Brandon is telling us a little bit of his history, giving an overview of his upcoming webinar series, and telling us what he is currently excited about in the industry. So, without further ado, we will get right into it. Brandon, can you tell us your story? Like, I mean, I don't know it. I don't know if Scott knows it, but like, how did you get how did you get from Rodeo MC to where you are now? Like, what's the story and what's the meaning behind the story? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Got it. So, yeah. So, I mean, we talked about the very start of my, my income earning career, right? That was the very first thing I did. Everybody's got their summer jobs they do when they were in school. And that's kind of what that ended up being for me. When I got out of school, I got into retail for a while, kind of moved around in the Washington area, working, selling shoes, Kenny Woolworth Corporation. That's where I had my first W-2 earned income, at least. And from there, I wanted to get, stable financially and those types of things that we all set out to do with the American dream. So I picked up a couple of additional jobs. I was working three jobs, and I thought, I've got to get this down to one. So that's when I started with Legend Brands. They had a position on the graveyard shift, running their rotational molders, the housings for the air movers and all that kind of stuff. So they had a position open up on that. I had a friend that worked there and said, hey, this is a great company. So I went and applied and worked a graveyard shift for a couple of years, 12 hours a night, 5 nights a week, up to 7 nights a week, depending on the orders coming in and hurricane season and all that stuff. And loved it. Absolutely loved it. Best shape of my life, working a machine like that. But then I just started to fall in love with the industry. My family had a business in and around pest control at the time. And I was doing still a little bit of work with that as well. I loved service as a business. I loved the restoration industry as a business and the people that were in it as I got to more and more familiar with it. I met people like Claude Blackburn and some of the other folks that are really the kind of the grandfathers of our industry. And I just kind of grew through that organization, through sales, service, training and education, started working with local restoration companies in the industry and going on call for them. So that as I got into positions where I wasn't working all night long, I was working more standard working hours, I could go out on call in the evenings and weekends and do water mitigation work. After several years of doing that and then getting into the training side of things, I just really fell in love with the technical aspects, got involved with standards, and that's when I met NextGear as an organization at the time. I was, really leading the technical side at Legend Brands. I was their technical director, is the official title. So I was in charge of their training division. I was also, a large part of a lot of the technical developments they did around product. Had a couple of patents that I got my name on, that type of thing. And met the folks at NextGear, met Tim Kempe, met Garrett, met some others. And it was actually not that long after meeting Scott, actually, because I had started to kind of dive into the world of applications, if you remember this, Scott. Yeah. And I was working with an application called DryPlan at the time because Legend Brands, wanted to have something they could use in training and in classes for documentation, et cetera. We saw this cool little app called DryPlan and thought, this would be kind of neat. We could do this. Had no idea what the software would look like. Absolutely none. And so Legend said, okay, you're our one resource that's gonna manage this application that we're gonna license. And that did not work. That was a lot of work. I learned pretty quickly just what software takes. But that, again, it's what led me to Scott. It's what led me into the next gear.
I was a client runner back in the day, and I used something like iCurly to get your payments done. And it was like you were a full-on entrepreneur within that massive company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a neat learning experience, but it taught me pretty quickly, A, that I love that space, but that B, I definitely was not a software project manager or developer or code writer or any of the above. But it gave me the opportunity to really get to know NextGear. And that's when I also learned that NextGear was looking for a technical resource. Actually, initially, tried to suggest a couple of technical resources to NextGear that I thought might be a good fit. Those didn't pan out. And then one day I remember telling Tim Kempe that the only other person I have on my list I think fits what you need is me.
The NextGear Legend Brands partnership, I'm remembering it. It was, we did the QR code. Was that like the first thing you kind of did together? Was that around the time that you were talking about when you were like kind of y'all were dabbling back then in software?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it all kind of kicked off with, there really needs to be some sort of relationship between our organizations. NextGear is the premier solution on the software side for the industry. And by premier, I don't mean that it's above and beyond what's needed. It is the flagship for the industry. It's what, the majority of this industry uses for project documentation and all things business. So because of that, and the fact that Legend was in a very, very similar position from the hard equipment, the durable goods side, it just made sense that there'd be at least some form of communication. So that's what initiated it. And we started talking about, what can that look like? What can we do together to help this industry move forward? And we started talking about different types of integrations and cooperative projects. And that's where QR codes were born, was from that. And that's why now on every piece of Legend Brands equipment, there is a QR code right on the front that says powered by NextGear on every single piece.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
And that's been part of what's made, NextGear, now CoreLogic, have the success and the traction that we've had is like, and that flows down from Garrett, is that mindset of like working together to create this sort of one-stop hub that benefits everybody, right?
Yeah.
So, Brandon, how has life changed for you since the acquisition to CoreLogic, and you're working there now and getting your feet? I know you're doing a lot of the same.
That's a great question. That's a great question. So, I mean, first, surprisingly, very little. That was the part that really surprises me when I sit back and kind of reflect on that. It's recent. The acquisition was relatively recent. We're just talking about in the last several months. But one of the things that really, really excites me that is changing are the resources that are available at CoreLogic and how those resources are beginning to kind of show their cards for how they're going to play in our opportunities as a software provider in the industry. Not the least of which being, just some of the data resources that are available and the ways that we can leverage some of that information that's out there in the real estate world and other parts of the the general industry around data that can really help, because this is where my mind always goes, can really help that technician who's out at 2 o'clock in the morning, on his child's birthday, right? Because he got called out on an emergency call. He's standing in, a foot of raw sewage in somebody's basement and he's not having a good day, right? This is not his brightest moment in time. But how can we help that person get through that process as quickly, as efficiently, and effectively as we possibly can? Get them back to, back home, get them back to their 4-year-old that's about to ready to have their fifth birthday. How can we make that happen? And with those types of resources, I see how we can take things like Mika and Dash, and we can make them even more efficient and even more effective by increasing that foundation that they're built on, that data that's already there. Who needs to go out there and grab that information if that information already exists, and pre-populate some of that stuff for them and other things like that? I just see those types of opportunities right on the horizon, and it gets me super excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think technology should serve people, not the other way around. And
yes, absolutely.
We're all on the same side of the supply chain. We've got the carrier policyholder, whatever they're going to for their insurance. You've got the contractors and you've got vendors. And historically, that's been been a adversarial relationship at times, but I think I think more and more it's going to a same team. How do we get this done? Because we get it done and everybody's happy. The file closes sooner. The homeowner is able to get back to good, or the commercial property owner is able to get back to business. And and that's becoming more and more of the why for everybody. And I think that aligns us. And then with technology, for me, if it's not gaining efficiencies to help you run a better business, or to help ultimately that policyholder get back to good quickly, then, you know, we're probably missing the mark. I think with that extra time, people have to spend as much time doing things. Well, are they making the experience better for the customer? Are they using, you know, those soft skills becoming more and more important? And part of it is getting them time to do the soft skills. So
it can't be technology for technology's sake.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it has to be technology for the purpose of making, you know, the job easier, you know, making it more efficient. I think of that. I think of my garage. You know, I buy tools for tool's sake. Right. I've got more tools than I know what to do with it in my garage that I probably use once, if ever.
Well, Brandon, you've got some new stuff coming up. What are you doing? What do you got going project wise?
Yeah, so I mean, kind of getting away from standards, I'll take that opportunity to kind of plug a webinar series that we just kicked off. So we just started a webinar series called Technically Speaking, kind of going off of the Iron Man theme. I know a lot of folks in this industry are a lot like me, and they love to absolutely geek out on the technical side of this industry. And really get into kind of the nuts and bolts of what makes mitigation work. What is the science? What is the technology? And then translate that. One of the things I've always tried to do in my career is translate that into the practical. So start out with really getting deep in the science, and then end up, you know, practically, how do I apply that? And that's what Technically Speaking is all about. We did a pilot episode on the beginning of this month, in December, and we are going to, our last month in December, and we are going to launch a first of the series here January 18th and dig real deep into the monitoring process specifically. So
how often, check it out. How often, what's your cadence? Are you, and then what's your format? Are you bringing guests in? Are you going through specific topics that are?
We're going to go monthly. I do not anticipate bringing in guests because of how packed these are going to be from a technical perspective. Okay. It's all about the content. It's all about the technical secrets and translating those into practical application. So I'm going to take my 20 plus years of training in and around mitigation and consolidate that into 12 1-hour episodes with just the hardest hitting stuff. It'll be a lot of fun.
Give me an example. What do you mean hardest hitting stuff?
So I'll give you an example out of the pilot episode. One of the things that we hit on really hard in the pilot episode is the principle that I've always called measure twice, right? And you've probably heard the adage, you know, you measure twice, cut once, right? Well, the same thing applies in mitigation. You know, when we're taking measurements and readings, and I see so many of these faces, especially with technicians, where they, you know, they grab a meter, they take a measurement, and they see a number, and they're like, okay, what is this supposed to tell me? And they're pulling their hair out. You know, what is this supposed to mean? And it means absolutely nothing by itself. And what a lot of people miss, and the little secret is that no measurement means anything alone. It always means something by comparing it to another, right? So you get into things like psychrometry and dew point and vapor pressure and grains per pound. Yeah, it sounds complex. It sounds confusing. It isn't. It's just, is one number higher than the other? If yes, you have one direction. If no, you have another. And if you can really boil it down and understand that simplicity, a lot of what feels complicated about mitigation really isn't. So we hit on that really, really hard in that first episode, in addition to another of other really cool industry secrets. And that's kind of how we distill them at the end of each episode, is what were the industry secrets that we talked about today and how do you apply them?
Nice. You got me excited. I want to go watch that pilot.
It's fun. It's fun. We do it in a fun style. You actually, it's funny, as I was presenting it, I had a couple of folks I know on the call that said, you know, I could actually smell a chalkboard while I was watching that presentation. That's kind of how deep we immerse into kind of that feel. So it's fun.
So what's exciting to you right now? And realizing that you're someone who probably reads the dictionary at night for fun and used to be the encyclopedia, maybe online, but... Industry-wise, what's got you excited? What are you working on specifically from the standards perspective or from internally with our projects? You don't have to name them all, but just one thing that just pops out to you.
But and actually, if you don't mind, Scott, I'm going to name two. I'm going to give one inside of the next gear and CoreLogic environment, and one in the standards.
Okay, Brennan always over delivers. I love it.
So in the next gear and CoreLogic space, you know what I'm most excited about right now is that I've been given an opportunity to lead we'll call it a version upgrade on Mika.
Yeah.
This is something that I've never really had the opportunity to do in the years that I've been with NextGear so far, is to really have that kind of, leadership role with a product like that. And Mika is the one of our products that is most up my alley. So I've been kind of given the reins to take this to the next level, and I'm super, super excited to deliver in 2022, a very, very significant upgrade to that app. It's a wonderful app as it is. It's got a great history to it, but we're gonna have fun with it.
Yeah, so it's gonna super be pretty excited. Neat. That's gonna reverberate throughout the industry. People are already talking about it. So you must have leaked something.
Yep. Somewhere, somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the standard side, what I'm super excited about is that we're gonna have a fire standard. Now, we have not had a fire standard, which might just blow your mind if you were thinking about, the most important standards for the navigation industry. Well, you've got to have a water damage standard and a fire standard and probably a remediation standard. Well, we've got most of those covered, but we've never had a fire standard. So that has me really excited. Not only the fact that we're going to have a standard, but the way in which the standard is being created. There are a number of organizations that are in this industry that have really been the shepherds and thought leaders of our industry from a technical standpoint, from a business practice standpoint. And IICRC is a part of that. But the other really big organization there is the RIA, right? The Restoration Industry Association. And this standard is a partnership between those two organizations. And that gets me really, really excited. You probably know, Scott, because you've been in the industry a long time, but that relationship hasn't always been great between those two. The RIA has always been, seen as representing kind of one part of the industry and the IICRC another. And about two or three years ago, that really changed. They entered into agreement with one another, where they're going to work collaboratively, and that's already shown its colors in a hundredfold, with the IICRC doing what it does best, managing, the certification. So they even manage the RIA designations now through the IICRC's kind of infrastructure of doing that. And the RIA focusing on what it does, kind of the technical shepherding and development of industry thought leaders and things like that. So that marriage between those two and that collaboration is outstanding. So that culminating in the S700 fire standard has me super excited.
Yeah, that is exciting. As exciting as standards can get, I do get excited about a new standard coming on and giving more tools for everybody in the field. It's just nice to have something to point to that embedded and proven over time. So it'd be nice to get the fire standard out there. What kind of a time frame are you looking?
Hard to predict. I would anticipate it's going to be in 2022. If I were to put my kind of thumb down and say, here's where I think the line in the sand is going to be, probably September-ish. That would be my approximation. The big unknown, the big if factor is, once that group has a draft out in industry to review, you go through a public review process. And it's right. Hard to know how long that's going to take.
So, Brandon, speaking of the podcast, you're going to be a frequent, you're going to have a frequent spot on this podcast. We're going to call it our Tech Minute. And you'll be coming out. I don't know. Tell me more about that. We're going to be splicing up from your podcast videos, or is it going to be something you're doing specific?
Kinda. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to take just a quick hit on the content that has not been shared yet in Technically Speaking. And I'm going to shoot that out via this podcast. And it's going to be a real quick hit, just 30, 45 seconds. That's going to give you one real good hard hitting industry secret, and how that secret applies for you and your business. So just bite-sized piece that'll have an impact.
So if nothing else, they'll have that to go home with.
Thanks for tuning in to Pulse 21. See you next episode.